Hi, and welcome to episode 29 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. I'm your host, Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask from Mars and Stalkerville, and joining me to storm the beaches of independent comics are writer, artist, and creator of the superhero webcomic Vanguard, and the busiest man in comics, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And he's an animal, a mineral, and a vegetable. It's Tony Esmond.
That's because I just made you re-record that introduction again.
Well, it seemed more fitting now.
Yeah. Can you also include that I'm now the writer of the Femforce spin-off, Femfresh?
Well, I think a lot of people are going to know you for that soon enough.
I think they will.
Yeah. What's your first story arc going to be about?
It's about it's sort of woman. She got married. It's a bit boring. Sort of wandering around the house. It's called The Bride. And it's available on Comixology.
Someone should really write an article about that.
They should do, shouldn't they?
Yeah. right. Our guest this week is the writer behind the action-packed alternate reality. Well, it's not alternate reality, actually, but it's a World War II book, Assault on Fortress Doom. We've talked about it before on the show, and now we've wrangled him in to actually coming onto the show and talk to us about it. It's Lex McDonald. Welcome to the show, Lex.
Hi, and thanks for having me.
Hi, Lex.
It's a very science fiction name you got there.
Yeah.
I suppose it's a little bit Lex Luthor, and then if Lex Luthor was part of a Scottish clan or something like that.
Yeah. Or Lex, the TV series, which I don't know if you've listened. I'm a big fan of.
Yeah. That was a while ago, about 15 years ago. Is that with the ship, the bio ship or something?
Yeah. I watched it when I was, very young.
Oh God, I can't believe the show is bringing you people together.
Lex claimed that he had listened to early episodes. Now he's proved that right.
Yeah, he knows this. He knows his stuff.
Yeah,
I was just thinking. I played my geeky hand very early by admitting I know that. So.
Oh dear. Right. So Lex is with us for the entirety of the show, as all the guests are normally, unless they don't want to talk to us all in this room.
Or storm off.
Yeah, that's true. I'm going to try and keep up the pretense that we do it all in a room now.
Okay.
I'm going along with that. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
I'm on board.
He's in the bath.
Tony's in the shower. It's lovely. We do record this show in a bathroom, and it's probably the sexiest show you'll never see.
The bathroom.
Yeah, Lex is with us for the entire show, and we're going to talk to him about his book, his awesome book, and how it came to be, and we're going to chuck a load of questions at him and see how he reacts soon enough. Mm. But before we get into that, shall we move on to the part of the show where we talk about what we've been reading, doing, dancing about, singing about? Tony?
Did you write that bit down as well? Is that a new bit?
This is completely off my head.
That was good.
I think it's all the Beechams I've been necking.
Does anyone in the country not know you've got a fucking cold or what?
No. I've completely carpet bombed the entire social media scene, complaining about my man flu. And I just want to put a shout out to Chris Wildgoose and Mark Lamming, who have been they've been my rocks. In a world that does not care, I love you both, and I know you know exactly where I'm coming from. So thank you, gents.
Here's a picture of me with a cold, with my hoodie up and a cat on my lap. That was my favourite.
I think a picture speaks a thousand words, doesn't it?
And you look like a homeless person.
that was the words that spoke. Yes. One of my friends said, "Have you got a onesie?" So I had to explain. No, I don't have a...
Yeah, got to pick him up on that. That can't stand.
No, I haven't got a onesie yet. So, Tony, what do you want to talk about this week?
Okay, first book this week. I've got two really good ones, actually, to talk about this week. First one is a book called Number One, which is by a guy called Box Brown. Has anyone heard of him?
Yes. Never read.
Right. Cool. Yeah, Box Brown is the writing name, the pseudonym, the pen name for Brian Brown, who's an American artist. He did Andre the Giant, which I think got quite a big release.
I've heard of that one.
Yeah, he's based in this has been published by Retrofit Comics, who are out of Philadelphia, and I know we've reviewed one of their books before. You could call it an anthology, but it's not. It's one longer story with one much shorter story at the back, both by Box Brown, both with art by him. Released in 2014, so I only just caught up to it. I was introduced to it by Simon Morton, who we've talked about before. From the sort of get go, it's just like the most eccentric comic you're going to read for a while, I would suggest. You know, normally at the bottom of mainstream comics, you have a little thing that says copyright of this is printed in 2015 by Marvel Comics, or whatever, you know. In this one, it's got contents and it's got number one, pronounced Numa One, which like immediately is just wrong. You know, so from the beginning, it's just like one big piss take. It follows a kid who meets his wrestling idol, a guy called Diamond Dick Corduroy, which is a name we all want to aspire to.
Oh, yes. God, yes.
Yeah. And he's a big wrestling fan. I don't really understand wrestling, to be fair, because I'm just slightly too old to get it. When I was following wrestling, it was Shirley Crabtree and Giant Haystacks. And
I'm a big wrestling fan.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not recently, but from about 1989 to 1992.
Yeah.
golden years.
The golden years. Yeah.
I got back into it recently, but then again, I also hang around in onesies with a cat. So.
Do you like cut your forehead and jump on stuff and things like that, hit people with garden chairs?
Yeah, but that's got nothing to do with wrestling.
That's his family barbecues.
that's the Kent family barbecue, that is. Midway Towns. Yeah.
Anyway, carry on, Tony.
Yeah, sorry. Anyway, so he meets him, and he's this sort of weirdly shaped. I mean, Box Brown's art is kind of like strangely representative, minimalistic, and it's sort of blocky, even, I suppose you could say. And it tells stories with a sort of very, very little detail. And he meets this weirdly shaped, sort of bulky guy carrying a suitcase with a big old belt buckle, and he says, "Oh, hi, Diamond Dick, you're my idol." And he says, "Listen, kid, there's $10 worth of free advice for you. There's a layer of bullshit over everything you see. Everything, you know." And the kid kind of takes this to heart. And I don't know if you know about it, but there's a word in wrestling called kayfabe. Does anyone know what that means?
Oh, yeah, kayfabe.
It's the word for it's the word that wrestling and the wrestling fraternity uses to describe the fiction of wrestling. Exactly. Isn't it like, yeah. Right, something like that? Yeah.
It's the portrayal of staged events within the industry, and it goes beyond what happens in the ring. It goes into, like, you know, the fake rivalries and the, you know, the managers and the, you know, all this sort of thing, and the wives, you know, the fake rivalries with the wives, and I don't know if anyone saw that Curb Your Enthusiasm episode where Larry David gets in a row with some wrestler. And he ends up telling the wrestler's kids, when the wrestler's, you know, in the shop, "Listen, kids, it's all fake. Your dad's a liar," you know, sort of thing. And it's a bit like that. You know, this kid sort of he uses this concept not to just question wrestling, but to question everything in his lives. Do you know what I mean? Him and his mate, and they say, "Seriously, it ain't bullshit about it. Think everything is shit." He says the TV, the internet, celebrities, cops, everything. And he you see him sort of looking around his life, and he's sort of realizing that everything around him is this sort of made up fallacy. You know, which isn't, I suppose, to a certain extent, in the internet age, we're kind of sort of hypnotized by stuff, and we're sort of convinced of stuff that perhaps honestly isn't actually that true a lot of the time, you know. I'm not like a conspiracy theorist, but you know, I don't, you know, if you come, it comes down to it, you don't really give a fuck about the Kardashians, who cares, you know. But they're, you know, certain things are built up to be more important than they are anyway. And it sort of, it becomes almost his like main aim in life, and he produces a magazine called Kayfabe Quarterly, which is the name of the story. But as with everything in the world, this sort of takes over and becomes a sort of capitalist money making venture beyond what his ethics said that it should have been at the start.
Okay.
He sells posters, and you know, then they get their own website and all this sort of thing, and then he comes across Diamond Dick Corduroy. Oh, that's got to be the best name ever. and whose name is Cordroyski, his real name. So he meets him, and he says, he meets him and he says, "Look, you know when you told me that there's a layer of bullshit over everything, that theory you had, well, it's fucked me up." And he gets another sort of life lesson from this wrestler, who by this point is sort of slightly over the hill and, you know, looks a bit of a drunk in a leather jacket, you know. And it's a really well-made thing. It just sort of brings home so much through a sort of a ridiculously stupid story about a man who produces a magazine about wrestling. And it deals with all kinds of things. You know, it deals with bigger issues at corporate, big business, building, you know, people's egos, delusions, bitterness, religion, you know. And it's all told within 35 pages.
Wow. Okay. That's pretty.
Yes. And it's not even that detailed. You know, it's very, you know, some of the pages, you know, there's not a great deal of lines on them. You know, and it's told with sort of grey and black and white, and the reflections in windows, and then the fake magazine covers that he shows us, and you know, it's really good. There's, I think, number two is out. I don't know if it's called number one, issue two, but it might be called number two, from Retrofit Comics.
How did you hear about it?
By Simon Morton, who's a guy I meet occasionally. He's sort of London small press guy, does Smooth Comics. And he was pimping some Retrofit Comics to me, and he said, "I'll have a look at this." And I'd look at it and really liked it. And now that Avery Hill have got a deal where they publicise Retrofit over here, and I think Retrofit, who are a Philadelphia-based company, publicise Avery Hill over there, sort of mutual deal, their stuff's more freely available, and you can get it in all the small press areas in London shops. I know Orbital's got a big section full of Retrofit stuff, so it's all there. You can find Retrofit at retrofitcomics.com. They're Retrofit Comics on Twitter, or you can find Box Brown at boxbrown.com, which is one of those sort of extended Tumblr pages. You know how people get a Tumblr page.
Yeah.
Name it of themselves. But yeah, really good, really quirky, slightly strange, but he does what he does in a very weird style, but he does it well, you know. And there's another little short story about a documentary maker who goes to see his film at the cinema, which isn't particularly much more than that, really, but it's a sort of nice little sort of end cap to a bigger story. Yeah, it's good. Well worth a look.
Oh, nice. Brilliant.
Cool. Sounds good.
What about you, Dan?
I didn't get a chance to pick up too much small press stuff this week, well, at all, so I've kind of gone back to a web comic.
You're too busy drawing, Dan. You're too busy doing your
comics. Yeah, I've been drawing a shitload of stuff for last half. So, I went to a web comic called Super Villainous. Have you ever heard this one before?
I haven't heard that one. No.
It's by a guy called Zappit. I can't find this person's real name, so I don't know.
Maybe he doesn't have one.
Yeah, maybe, or he or she. I don't know.
Thank you.
But it's a story of a supervillain called the Crimson Claw, who's living the dream. He's kind of got it all, the big secret hideout, kind of everything sorted. There's no kind of real problems with his life, except for the fact he's a dad, and he's trying to balance the fact that he's kind of like trying to look after his kids' welfare and his relationships. And on the other side, you get these cross-dimensional demons, superheroes, and like PTA meetings all coming up. And he has to kind of try and keep on top of it all. Right. It's really amusing. It's kind of done not like strip style, but there's like about four or five panels in a square, and each one's kind of its own joke, but it tells a continuing story. So like the first couple, it starts off where the defenses inside his base is going a bit awry, and it's chewing up henchmen. So like a representative of the henchmen's union comes in to talk to him, and it's not going well. So he has to send his bodyguard, who's called Meat, to go and pick his kids up from there's like a place like Chuck E. Cheese, and it's good. It's well worth a read. I think that I'm not sure how much there is of it, but there's a fair old whack. It's been going quite a few years, and I was surprised it's all made on the iPad. The guy does everything.
Okay. Really?
And yeah, to look at it, I don't know what program's been used, because the lettering and everything looks great. I wonder if the art's just been done on the iPad and it's lettered in another program. But
have you used an iPad much for art? I mean, I haven't. I don't know what the capabilities are like for that kind of.
No, I've tried stuff. When I've done a drawing or something on an iPad, you get a thing where when you touch the screen and draw, you get the second after the kind of delayed response.
Okay.
I can't work like that. It's just.
You want immediacy.
Exactly. Well, yeah.
That must be something they're fixing on the new iPad. You know, there was a big thing at the end of last year. There's a new big iPad they're bringing out, and a lot of artists were going crazy about it, and they must have fixed that latency issue.
Oh, I think okay, that's good.
Yeah. I would love, well, maybe at London Super Comic Con, which we're going to.
Yeah,
more about that later.
Start plugging that. But the last time I went to the MCM, they had Wacom was there, and they had the tablets there. And you get on one of those bad boys, and you're like, yeah, that's great. I mean, it'd be great for Apple to turn up. I doubt if they really need to. But maybe you just go into an Apple, one of their Lightbox shops, and they have one on the go that you could check out. I mean, is that a stylus? Do you do that with, or?
Yeah, I think I think on YouTube you can see a whole bunch of when they demoed this. I think it was in mid-November last year. Apple did had some big press day where they revealed this new iPad and had artists using it, and it uses a special stylus. It's a massive iPad as well. It looks like it's It looks like it's A3. It's huge.
So it's more like a sort of Cintiq, you know, one of those sort of tablets.
Yeah. And it's I'm not an artist, but the thing I remember a lot of people saying on Twitter is, you know, this could make Wacom nervous because it's the real deal.
Okay. Right? Yeah.
I just can imagine artists being nervous that you're going to drop like $2,000 or $3,000 on a tablet thing to do your art on, and then you're kind of unsure it's going to be able to do what you want it to do. But you can
play Candy Crush at the same time, right?
Yeah, Candy Crush.
It's a video game, Tony. Don't worry.
Oh, okay.
don't worry about it.
Bringing it back on point. You can read Supervillainous at supervillainous.spiderforest.com.
And it's Spider Forest.
Yeah, I don't know. What? Don't ask me about that.
Amazing.
I don't
know.
Yeah.
That sounds like a dream I had once.
that sounds more like a nightmare, or like a forest made of spiders.
Yeah. Did I tell you about that dream I had?
Which one? You've told me about many dreams, and they're the reason I can't get any sleep.
You said you watched Excalibur, and then you had a weird dream.
Oh, no, it wasn't that one. I had a weird dream a couple of weeks ago where I'm like running through the forest and I'm sort of beating back all the forest. And then I find this sort of oval-shaped cave. And then this big snake starts hitting me in the back of the head, trying to push me into the cave. That's all I can remember. If anyone's like into like working out what dreams mean, can they like write in maybe?
So when
I suggest you avoid any wooded areas with large snakes.
Yeah, that's probably true.
But if a giant snake man attacked you, Tony,
was it a man? What do you mean?
Do you think you could beat him off?
Yeah, I'll have a go. So
you could definitely beat him off.
I could beat him off.
Brilliant.
Was the snake cycloptic?
What's the maybe.
So you could beat off the one-eyed snake man.
Yeah, if he came near me.
Say it, Tony. Say it.
No, because you always try and do this. You try and get me to say things. I'm trying to open up to you here.
Okay. Don't do that, son.
Like the oval cave.
Yeah. Vince desperately clawing, trying to find a chink in the armour.
He's like Iron Man. Only sexier. Anyway, that sounded really good, Dan. back on point.
Yeah, that does sound good, yeah.
Yeah, I had to check that out. What I've been reading this week is another webcomic, actually. Although awesome. I read it in print versions. It's Widdershins by Kate Ashwin. Anyone heard of this?
You know what?
I've heard of this, yeah. I've seen them at a lot of the shows at the end of last year.
That's exactly the same. I was just watching the video. I was on the London Super Comic Con website. Give out another name check. They owe us money. Yeah. And they've got like a couple of videos, and they do one of those like walking about on the con floor ones. And I saw that on that, yeah. Okay.
Oh, well, I haven't seen that. I've just been reading her books.
Are we going to fucking get that then? People come out with video cameras.
They'll want to.
Oh, yeah. God.
Oh, you'll be going, look, it's that. Oh, look, it's that way to the toilet, clenching, won't you? You know, pointing.
I never clench. Anyway, Widdershins by Kate Ashwin, who's going to be at the London Super Comic Con. Hopefully we'll be able to talk to her there as well. It's a series of sort of a Victorian era adventure stories set in a fictional town called Widdershins. It's set in West Yorkshire. It's England's magical epicentre, which is home to bounty hunters, failed wizards, stage magicians, and more.
Like me, have they been to Yorkshire?
is it like that?
I don't think so.
All right. The webcomic, it's told in chapters, and each chapter is a complete story. So, and every single one of them is like light-hearted, comical, and sort of huge amounts of fun. They're fantastic little adventures. I know a lot of people, I think Sarah Millman might have mentioned on the show. I know a couple of people have mentioned.
Right. Yeah. You're right, she did.
Kate Ashwin's work is known throughout the small press community. And the stories mainly focus on a small set of main characters, although there's also a great supporting cast as well. But the main cast consists of Harriet Barber, a sardonic bounty hunter with a love of adventure, her dog Greenwich, and a good pipe. Who doesn't love a good pipe? I don't smoke, but I just love a good pipe. Sydney Malick, a reasonably competent wizard with a passion for stage magic. Jack O'Malley, a guy with an attitude problem, mainly due to the fact that he can see the spirits that form magic and emotion. And Heinrich Wolf, a music-loving and carefree former soldier. Now, they're the small set of characters that take part in the first three stories. I haven't actually read the webcomic, but that's purely because I have the first three volumes in print. the website, widdershinscomic.com, is so well put together, it's like it's bursting at the seams with content. So I highly recommend people check it out, because there's like character bios, fan art, even a character's family tree, which I thought was pretty cool.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, and there's like a store to pick up the physical copies from Kate herself if you don't see her at a show. And online, there are actually 5 complete volumes. There's Volume 1, Sleight of Hand, then No Rest for the Wicked, Vanishing Act, Piece of Cake, Green Eyed Monster, and number 6, Find the Lady, is currently on the go at the moment. So she hasn't... these are pretty long stories as well, so she hasn't been resting on her laurels. You know, she's properly... She's churning this stuff out, because it updates twice a week, I think, Tuesdays and Thursdays. The first 4 volumes of it are available now in print and were all made possible due to a couple of very successful Kickstarter campaigns. I got the first 3 in the first Kickstarter that she did. And the print copies, people should, if they're going to do print copies of a webcomic. I mean, this is my opinion. She's got character sketches and notes and stuff like that. You know, just a bit of back matter as well, which is always cool. So you get a little bit more extra that you wouldn't necessarily see online. Now, I sat down and read the third book, Vanishing Act, this week, which involves Harriet and Sid getting involved with a case of a missing Chinese magician's assistant, which goes in loads of different directions, and it's a proper rollicking adventure as well. But one of the things that impressed me about like this book is Kate's writing of it. I mean, the artwork's really clean, precise. She uses nice effects. You know, she does everything just right. But it's her writing of the characters that made them so endearing, and like there's dialogue that is actually fitting for these characters. There's nothing over the top that really pulls you out of the story.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think because the first story, Sleight of Hand, involves Harriet and Sydney, but the second story involves Jack and Heinrich. So, you know, because she's telling the story in this world, she can just tell the story that she wants to tell with a certain set of characters. They're not all necessarily cooperating at the moment. Yeah, it's brilliant, though. Widdershin. I mean, I've had these 3 volumes for a while now, and I've been, you know, I've sort of got through them like one at a time, and it's about time I got onto Vanishing Act, and I think it's probably my favourite one. So next time I see her at a show, I'm definitely going to pick up the 4th volume when I see her, which will probably be in February.
She does a lot of shows, doesn't she?
Yeah, I think so.
London ones, yeah.
Is she from London? I don't know. I mean, I'm
not sure. No.
Yeah, we'll find out. That sounds a bit scary when I put it like that.
A little bit.
But as well as this, she's done all of this, and she's also worked on a previous comic called Darken, and I found out this from the website, which ran for 8 years, and there's 600 pages of it that you can read online. It's all about demons, duchesses, and dark lords of hellfire, and it's all completely free to read online, and you can check that out at darkencomic.com. So, and all of this stuff is free, but the books that she puts out are really nicely put together as well. So, you know, I highly recommend you pick them up. You can follow Kate on Twitter at Kate Draws Comics, and she's endeared herself to me because of the way she wrote her bio as well. Kate Ashwin is just past 30, going a little grey, and has been making internet comics since 2002. Those last two may be related. She lives in the north of England. There you go. With her very tolerant husband and an array of cats, where she draws all day and on special occasions leaves the house. So I think there's a lot of people out there, especially artists who are doing this amount of work, that don't leave their house. Dan, do you leave your house?
Goes on the train.
Yeah. Usually I just go up and down to London, just drawing on the train.
Yeah.
Trying to get people to interact with me.
Oh, dear. Yeah, well, I'm not going to say what train that is because I don't want people following you. It's bad enough for those kids going, look, it's that drawing guy.
Hey, and the best picture of someone sticking a vibrator up their arse was done of you this week, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yes, yes.
Friend of the show, James Gibbs.
He's immortalising us one at a time.
That was the funniest one. I woke up to see that one and thought, that is brilliant.
Yes, that's amazing. You can check that out on the Facebook page. And thank you very much, James, for that, because that made us all laugh. So check out widdershinscomic.com and follow Kate on Twitter, and I'm sure there's loads more to come from here. So,
nice one, mate.
So there you go. Lex, sci-fi space captain and writer. What have you been reading this week?
I feel really bad because everyone's saying these really cool kind of small press things, and the main thing I've kind of been looking at this week is actually a big image release. It actually came out in November. Is that okay to talk about?
Well, yeah.
I'll tell you what, so many people say that. They say, I feel really bad for mentioning an Image comic.
It's always an Image book, isn't it? It's never like a Marvel or DC at the moment.
They're turning into the Evil Empire. Or the First Order, I should say. The First Order.
All relevant. what book was it?
Yeah, it's a thing called Citizen Jack. Have any of you guys heard of it?
Sam Humphries. Yeah.
Yeah, Sam Humphries is doing the new Star-Lord, and it's an artist called Tommy Patterson who has done lots and lots of Game of Thrones stuff before, but I don't really know any other specific comics that he's done. But it's up to issue 3 now, started in November. And in a nutshell,
out last week, didn't it? I think.
January 13th, actually. Yeah, it's basically in a nutshell. There is a small town politician in America. He's a bit of a laughing stock, kind of failed career as a mayor, and he has a run on the presidency, and he's backed by a demon. It's a kind of Dr. Faustus type thing. And it's really, 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 really good. I first noticed it on when I was on Twitter. I followed Tommy Patterson and was seeing a lot of stuff coming out about it. And I'm quite interested in American politics. And the timing of it just could not be better because basically it's a whole thing about the madness of the American system. And
he's got to be rubbing his hands around Trump being such an idiot at the moment, isn't he?
All the interviews I've seen with him, he just says he cannot believe that. I mean, they've been planning the comic, I think, for a year and a half. And just at the best possible moment, Trump has surfaced and everything's gone crazy.
like a Loch Ness monster.
If I was more of a conspiracy theorist, I think they were in league in some way, because you could not have a better promotion for a comic than Trump. I mean, it doesn't follow necessarily what Trump is doing right now, in a super accurate way or whatever, but it's basically about the madness of the American political system and how this guy does all sorts of outrageous stuff and he can't put a foot wrong. Every crazy thing he does goes viral, he becomes bigger and bigger and bigger, and all the while in the background he's being driven by this demon. And it's not one of those things where, well, one thing I quite like about it as well, it's not they don't go down the route of is the demon real or isn't he? Is it just in his head? The demon is very much real. So they resolve that quite early on. And it's just a lot of fun. It looks great. Tommy Patterson's artwork is brilliant. It's really high standard, and it's funny. So I think Sam Humphries is the real deal. He can really write. And I think right now with everything that's happening, especially in the election year, it's just a great comic to read. Yeah. I was watching the debate last week. I think it's the third GOP debate or whatever, and it's just getting more and more crazy. And this comic just goes perfectly with that. I can't recommend it highly enough. It's excellent.
Yeah. Cool. It's, well, of course, Sam Humphries came in on our radar with Planet Hulk, which he did with Mark Hamming, which is excellent as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah,
writer.
Sam Humphries is on fire at the moment. I think he's really coming into his own, which is brilliant, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, good. Yeah, it's just a stat. I mean, it's available everywhere. The First Order have got their hands everywhere. So,
well, I mean, I must say, this week I actually got one of those humble bundles.
Oh, you did, didn't you? Yeah.
Yeah. I think part of it was like for charity as well. But it was one of those pay whatever you want and you get like a collection. If you pay over $20, then you get everything. And there was like so many good volumes that I've been meaning to pick up, like Odyssey. And like there was the first issue of Huck, which I wanted to read for ages. Mm. People have divided opinions about Mark Miller, but when he gets it right, he gets it really right.
Yeah, I think you're right.
For me personally,
Civil War was fucking brilliant.
Yeah, Civil War was brilliant. I thought the first Kick-Ass was brilliant, no matter what people say. I mean, what was the one? Nemesis, that didn't really ring for me, really.
I really like Mark Miller, but I also thought weirdly the Kingsman movie I actually preferred to the comic book.
The Secret Service. But Huck's like just a brilliant book.
He's doing with Wilfredo Torres. I always get mistaken. Is it Jupiter Circle or there's two Jupiter's books, aren't there?
Jupiter Circle, which I believe is a prequel, that was part of the Humble Bundle, and there was things
that's Wilfredo. I know Wilfredo. I'm known from New York quite a lot. He's Fred of Marks, and he is a super nice bloke, and his artwork, because he's doing the Doc Savage covers at the moment for Dynamite.
Yeah.
I love his stuff. He, if there was ever a man who's, who should be drawing a Mad Men, you know, comic book, it's him.
Oh, awesome.
Incredible stuff. Yeah. I hope you enjoy that one, mate. I love that.
Oh, good. Yeah. Because, I mean, yeah, that was like one of the books that was on there. I just thought, you know, there was Low, Volume 1, Nowhere Men. There was a Rat Queen special, Trees, Volume 1, which was talked about by Chris Welsh on the last show.
Yeah, we love Trees, don't we? Yeah,
Witches, Volume 1, Bitch Planet. There was so many books. Okay. Injection, that was another one that was talked about.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you see any of these Humble Bundles, you know, give them a try, I think, because I was really, I was pleasantly surprised. I mean, obviously, Image do a very, we've talked about it before, they do a very clever sort of get you hooked with the first volume and then you'll come back for more. And I think I think that's going to work on me, I think.
Yeah.
With a couple of these.
Yeah.
Make them sound like smack dealers.
Oh, yeah. In the best best kind of drugs.
Best kind of dealers, aren't they, smack dealers?
Oh dear, yeah. So there you go, folks. There's plenty of stuff from our read pile that I think there's lots of people going to be adding to their lists and checking out. So, but now we're going to shift the attention to you, Lex. Assault on Fortress Doom. Are you ready? Are you limber?
I was born ready. No, that's not true.
Oh, one of our favourite films.
Assault on Fortress Doom. Pitch it to us.
Okay, so it's the end of the war, end of World War II. Everyone's gearing up for VE Day, and behind the scenes, although Hitler's dead, but behind the scenes, there's a massive panic going on with the Allies. They're going around recruiting kind of all sorts of top soldiers from different places around the world. And very quickly, you get to a situation where they've all been pulled together in London and they discover the truth. Nobody knows about it except for the very top brass. And basically, there's a rogue Nazi general who's holed up in a big mountain retreat, and he's built a doomsday weapon, pretty horrible one. And the group of soldiers are tasked with stopping the end of the world. And I'd say the major thing there is that they don't have very long. The missile is going to be launched just before VE Day. And so they have about 5 hours to go and deactivate this thing. Some of the people in the story aren't who they say they are. They're using all sorts of secret technology because obviously the Allied forces have pulled together all of their most up-to-date weaponry to give them a fighting chance. The whole thing takes place on the night of that mission. I grew up watching lots and lots and lots of World War II stories, and this is my way of trying to tell a World War II story just with some of the wackiness and imagination that you're more free to do in comics.
Nice.
Brilliant. I read it through again today. It's cracking. It reads like one of those films. Kind of just cool. giving it a bit more of a push and made it a bit more kind of extreme.
I was gonna say some people, there are a few people who I think bought it off the Kickstarter thinking that maybe it was a kind of historical document or it's going to be very kind of so there are also lots of friends of my parents who keep asking, like, did you do lots of research and is it factually accurate? And I kind of say, well, yeah, the first 10 pages is reasonably accurate, and then when you start having electromagnetic gauntlets and ridiculous planes, then maybe that goes out the window.
Well, I was going to say, it feels kind of very well researched as a kind of a period piece. It feels like it in that period. Whereas sometimes you pick up work and you just feel like, oh, they're just putting these costumes on like superhero templates. But it's not; it doesn't feel in the time period where this does. Like, oh, it's cracking.
Yeah. That's awesome. It's really nice to hear that, because that's a really big thing for me, just because, you know, I wanted it to... I think there are lots of things where people try and do period stuff, but it feels like it's just being done in a very modern vernacular, you know. So an example would be so many things. I'm thinking more actually of movies here rather than comic books, but, you know, so many things feature heroes that are basically kind of 19 to 25 years old, you know, male, or they're just very handsome kind of young things. And one of the things that I always thought about World War II movies and probably about World War II in reality is that, you know, the best people, the best soldiers were people who were experienced. You know, they weren't people who were 21 and looked like supermodels. They were veterans, you know, and that's and so that's something that was really important to me, just to kind of bring that element of reality to it.
I think generally everything's going that way. I mean, if you watched a movie in the 70s, you know, when there were sort of guys robbing a bank, or, you know, they're, you know, sort of the hard-bitten guys in the army, they were never, you know, these sort of blokes who look like they'd fall over in a wind, you know? Well, I think we're going that way now, aren't we? The amount of TV series I watch where, you know, the guy turns up and, oh, no, we're being robbed, and you think, my mum could beat him up.
Yeah. Well, I kind of like the older kind of action hero, like you say, if you've kind of got the 21-year-old guy doing this kind of stuff, or when it's kind of like a veteran soldier in his sort of like 40s, 50s, and he's kind of like, he's a sure hand, he's done it 101 times. You know, the reason he's got to this age.
You, you're going to feel it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
I think that's a big part of the whole, you know, making it just, I mean, obviously there's crazy stuff in it and whatever, but make it feel just a little bit more grounded in reality. But I think the other thing as well is, and this is a real pet peeve of mine in, you know, comics and films generally as well, is just people doing hero stories where there's not enough jeopardy and there's not enough pain for the team. You know, there's not enough, this is another thing. The number of things I think I've read over the last 15 years where there are people who are virtually, you know, they set up a great story, but their heroes are just completely impervious to pain. And for me, I've always loved stories, you know, where I watched Christmas. It's become a bit of a ritual to watch Die Hard on Christmas Eve.
Fair play. Yeah. Did the same myself. Go on.
Yeah, and I'm one of the things I love about that movie is, you know, John McClane really suffers. And the more and more you see more new movies and, new, you know, this is, it really stands out. I mean, he really gets put through the ringer.
Yeah, big time. I can remember, like the whole scene with the glass and the feet, and he's like limping for the rest of the film, and he gets shot in the shoulder, gets beat the fuck out of. It's it's great. I mean, I don't want to kind of go to spoiler territory too much, but not all the characters make it out in Assault on Fortress Doom. Can we go to spoilers? But I don't want to kind of just say like it's like they get put through the ringer in this as well, and not. Everyone makes it out. So.
I mean, it's got that sort of you could say like a Dirty Dozen kind of vibe, isn't it? There's a mission that has to be done, and they know they may not make it out. So it makes sense that people, you know, that some of these guys won't come back or gals.
I suppose I don't want to spoil it, but it doesn't end well for most of the people in the team. But I felt really bad just before Christmas. There are a few people who got it for their kids, and even a few just kind of, you know, random comic fans that had found it on Kickstarter who had got it, like 15, 16-year-olds. And one of the general responses seems to have been, you know, oh my God, there's a lot of death at the end. And again, I suppose it's just because there's not much of a, we're very used to things that are, you know, franchises and long ongoing stories. And of course, if you kill off important people early in those things, you kind of shoot yourself in the foot, which is kind of what I might have done.
But some of the best things, like you say, like the Dirty Dozen, or, you know, even the Magnificent Seven or the Wild Bunch. Look at who makes that out of those films alive.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's always ones you don't expect as well. It's always some of those characters that you really don't expect to make it.
I
really like, I think, good heroic sacrifice, you know, is a very British thing. So that's something, you know, I always, when I was first writing the story, one of the first things I knew would be that there'd be lots of sacrifice at the end. So,
And within the first like 10 or so pages, you put a pregnant woman in peril when a submarine appears. There's a submarine scene at the beginning. She doesn't die, folks. She's perfectly fine, and she's one of the main characters in it. But this scene at the beginning, I was like, oh, right, well, gloves are off then. Anything could happen in this.
Yeah.
It's actually funny because when we were doing that, I was thinking, there's something kind of mean about that, putting a submarine underneath and whatever. But, the whole thing of just making it, you know, as realistic as possible is also just because I'm really interested in the history of that period. And the minute I wrote a little kind of promotional piece that was on Bleeding Cool just before Christmas. And one of the things I said in it that I really believe about is just that there's been so much, you know, World War II is massively oversaturated, and there have been so many really good things lately. Have any of you guys read Uber, the Kieran Gillen?
I haven't read it, but I have heard of it.
I haven't read it. Yeah, it's very popular with some people.
It's wicked. I mean, it's absolutely top notch. It's really good, and there've been lots of things like that. But I just felt the thing that I hadn't seen for ages was just a World War II story. So that's a World War II story that doesn't have vampires, zombies, ridiculous amounts of mecha suits and super tech. And although there are some of those elements in my thing, I just wanted it to, like you guys said, I just wanted it to be more of a Dirty Dozen, more of an old-fashioned World War II story.
Well, you could...
Sorry, mate, go on.
I say those elements could be stripped away, but it's just the element of fantastic that when it's got this stuff in it, I mean... But yeah, anyway.
Yeah.
So, Tony?
I was going to say that there's some great... I mean, it's as a comic, you know, superhero fan, mostly comic fan, you know, it's been made popular and been made interesting. If you look at Peggy Carter, or you look at the first Captain America movie and stuff, where they do it so well. Mm. You know, yeah. It looks great in those films as well.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, I thought I really enjoyed Captain America, actually, and the World War II stuff looked great in it, and Peggy Carter is awesome as well. So, you know, they are funny ways. I mean, I think the only... They're good examples. The only thing is there's just a thing I sometimes feel, which is that when you have the reason a lot of those extra elements were brought in, you know, so having superheroes in World War II and vampires in World War II is because I think there's a feeling that you needed to reinvent a dying genre, which is fair enough. But I always feel that once you've got vampires in a world or you've got the supernatural, all of the stuff from World War II that's actually a part of World War II loses its value a little bit. So, I'm not so scared of Hitler and the Nazis if there's a big demon behind them all making them do it.
Garth Ennis has done some stuff recently. Is it War Stories, I think?
He's been doing that for years. He loves, he's very good.
Really good stuff. Yeah. But then what is not really spoken about, but I think still sells quite well. I know John Freeman on Down the Tubes goes on about it a lot, is the Commando comics.
Yeah.
You know, you don't see them in comic shops anymore, but they sell well in newsagents and stuff. You know, they're always in Double H Smith's. And they're always worth a read,
I think. They were one of the books that I sort of grew up with, because my nan used to collect them.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, so when I was a little Vince, pop over to the nan's and I'd read a lot of Commando books.
I remember those being a lot less PC than they are nowadays. And when I've looked back in the older ones, I don't seem to find any examples of, like, you know, they like used to throw grenades saying, like, suck on that, you sausage-eating swine and stuff like that. Do you know what I mean?
I'm going to say there was probably some anti-German, anti-Japanese stuff they probably wouldn't use these days. I'm going to guess at that. I'm thinking probably,
that kind of stuff. Like, I can remember reading it when I was younger, just taking it in. And when I looked at one more recently, they had done a collected version of the older ones.
Yeah,
I could swear they were a bit more full on than this, but maybe that's just kind of rose tinted glasses, not Book of Beck.
Yeah,
facial terms.
Yeah. Did you?
Sorry.
Go on. No, you carry on.
No, I was just going to say there's one of the things I suppose it's a joke about that kind of stuff in the Assault on Fortress Doom is, you know, we have sometimes, you know, you see the Nazi soldiers, you know, using that kind of old commando, you know, Schweinhund and Achtung and all that stuff. And it's, you know, it's funny because I remember reading something that said, actually, you know, nobody would have ever said the word Schweinhund, you know, pig dog. It doesn't actually mean anything. This is an English invention. So,
yeah. Cool. All right.
One of my favourite lines in Assault on Fortress Doom, actually, is one of the main characters is around, I think, the 25-page mark. He's just got a pipe in his hand, and he's going, "Trust the Nazis to pull a stunt like this." And I think that says it all.
you and I have talked pipes before. No, not like that. But because of the Mighty Boosh, they have pipes, don't they?
Yeah.
I'm desperate just to get a pipe. I don't want to smoke. I just want to carry a pipe.
Yes. Around. Oh, thank God. Someone else that wants to do that. I'm exactly the same. I want quite an ornate or cool looking pipe.
Just like in the Mighty Boosh, because they're writers, aren't they? So they have to have pipes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes I hold a pen in my mouth like it's a pipe. Do you do that?
Yep.
Oh, thank God.
I actually looked into it. They're quite expensive to get pipes, aren't they? I think you can't get them cheaply. And you don't want a second hand one, do you?
Oh, God, no.
No. Okay. Sorry to get off the subject there, Lex. Sorry about
that. No, not at all. It's
pipe watch.
I'm hoping that the comic sparks a big revival in pipe smoking. Right. Actually,
so, I know you've got like a little hip flask as sort of as one of your extras. Maybe
I thought that
thinking about a pipe, maybe.
Yeah, you know what? That would actually have been absolutely brilliant. But I feel marginally more comfortable endorsing alcoholism than I do
cancer. Yeah.
So it's funny you say that about the pipe, because someone asked me the other day, you know, what they were asking me, where did it all come from, whatever, or, you know, what were the first things I was reading, and I was the first comic I ever read. I was very little, and for some reason in our house we had a copy of Dan Dare, the Man from Nowhere. Do any of you guys know that?
Yeah.
So, and there's a minor character in it, in that it called Lex O'Malley, who's like a kind of salty sea dog, who's a friend of Dan's. And you know, he's smoking a pipe at every available opportunity, and it always stuck in my mind. And that one of the reasons in the comic that we have the major with the pipe is just, I love this idea that, you know, a good British officer in the middle of a battle has always got time, even if there's 1 hour left to save the world, to light up a pipe and have a think on things.
Yeah.
So there's something very British about that. So.
Yeah, there is. There's like those moments in Dam Busters, is it the film, where they go out and they're standing by the water, aren't they? And they're sort of smoking a pipe and looking out. Sort of thinking about how the bomb would, like, you know, these days they'd be rushing around shouting into their mobile phones and screaming because a bomb was about to go off in 25 seconds or something.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like that. It's like there's actually an amazing thing on YouTube. There's a, I think if you look up Lancaster bomber crew or something like that. When I was researching the comic, I was, you know, looking at all sorts of things, and if you type in Lancaster bomber crew, there's a recording from the 1940s. It's the audio track of a bomber crew doing a run over Germany, and they are unbelievable. These guys, they're basically, this, you know, there's flak surrounding them, their wingmen have been shot down, you can hear the noise, and they are so remarkably calm. It's ridiculous. It lives up to all the cliches, a kind of British understatement. They have
that sort of voice. It's like, so there, Tony, how are we doing?
I love all that stuff.
They get hit at one point. One of the guys from the back of the plane reports something, and the bloke at the front, the captain, is just like, calm down now, calm down. And not all at once. And what's going on here? I mean, I don't think I would have lasted very long in that environment myself, to be honest. You know,
We don't like a drama, do we?
Yeah.
We don't like to dramatise stuff over here. I hate people who have a melodramatic reaction to everything. Do you know what I mean?
You will have to send us the link for that so we can put it on the show.
Yeah, definitely.
For people to check
I will do, yeah.
On that news, Tony, I just found a new breaking news. I've got a new Twitter follower.
Oh, wait. Well done, mate. Brilliant. It's great news.
Excellent. Great news.
Yeah, no, so pleased for you, mate. I'll stick something up on Down the Tubes about that.
Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah, that's
I mean, what do they know about Vanguard comic? We can only surmise and judge. Before we came on there, Lex, you mentioned that you'd never actually spoken to the artist, Ed, for a
song. Yeah, that was, I found that weird. It's, and you Ed said it's almost a superstition now that you won't ever speak to him.
Yeah, so that's basically, I found Ed on DeviantArt, and he, you know, we got chatting, and he could do World War II stuff, and we got on very well. And I was quite kind of high detail at the time. So, you know, I'd been thinking about this for ages and had lots of notes and whatever. And we just got into this rhythm of writing back and forth emails. And for some reason, we never got round to calling each other. And he's quite high detail as well. So he'd write back these kind of long emails. And it just became a superstition, you know. It's weird because there's no reason not to talk. But I think it, because we're also a long way away, and he's in Uruguay, I think we just kind of figured,
really?
If it ain't broke, you know, don't fix it. So.
He's got such a great style as well. I mean, he's with this sort of the era of the story you're telling. You know, you've got to draw bombers, you've got to draw mountains. It's not just cool looking soldiers. You've got like landscapes, and this guy does it with aplomb. It looks really good.
As I said, there's a spread at the end where it's in Trafalgar Square, double page spread. And it's great. It's really well done. I mean, he doesn't draw every single little person, but you get, like, he doesn't need to. That's kind of there, if you know what I mean. He does a really good job.
Did you have to find reference of Trafalgar Square of the time to send him so he knew what he was looking for?
Yeah, there was lots of, you know, so for all the vehicles and stuff, you know, we always use period, you know, as many reference pictures as possible. And the same thing for Trafalgar Square. And it's a bit of a bastard, actually, because bizarrely, although there's a very famous picture of Trafalgar Square on VE Day, but it's only from, you know, there are very limited angles for that stuff. And so that's a little tricky, but Ed is a really good artist. He's really good. And I hope he's actually really started on something else right now, actually. I don't know how he hasn't done more.
What, with
stuff
you, Lex,
before.
Or with someone else, or
no, with someone else. There's a chap in America who's actually found him, and they're doing. It's a guy called I can't remember his name exactly, but the comic is called Chaos Campus, and it's like a a Buffy type thing, but with lots of girls with big boobs and lots of zombies and stuff like that. It's been running for ages, and Ed is, okay. I think Ed is the new artist working on that. And
He reminds me a little bit of Derek Robinson when he was doing The Boys. That sort of style. That,
yeah.
Face is very similar to me. Yeah. No, it's great stuff. Yeah, really good.
What was the timeline and kind of artwork on this? How long did it take you from getting from the writing to getting the script to him, and then from him delivering the artwork? Because it seems like there's a hell of a lot of art and work in that.
Yeah, I mean, it was massive. It was because I couldn't think of any way to do it as a. I didn't want to do it as a serialized comic, you know, just because it really is. And I hope that everyone kind of feels the same thing, which is that it makes sense to tell this as just one big story, you know.
Yeah.
I think if I'd have broken it up into 25 page chunks, it wouldn't have really worked. So basically, I wrote the story actually a long time ago. I wrote the story in 2002.
Okay.
And I never got around to doing anything with it, and life followed different paths. And then I decided in about 2011 to get going with it again. And so we just, we would do it chunk by chunk by chunk, bit by bit by bit. And it would normally take, it would take me a little while to get like a set of notes together. I'd send them off. Ed would get them back. He'd do the lines in a few days for say two or three pages. The colours were a bigger issue. We both would have liked to have a colourist, but I couldn't afford to pay someone else, and it just didn't work out that way. And also Ed quite likes colouring his own stuff. And beggars can't be choosers, so we went down that route, and it was fine. And Ed knows
the colours are great on it though. The
yeah,
colours are really
very painterly.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
And he's, you know, that's the thing. Ed is very multi-talented. You know, he really put a real shift in getting all that done. So but the whole thing, I mean, it's a funny story actually about how long it took. So basically, end to end, I started working with Ed in about August 2011, and we actually finished the comic in December 2014. But there were a few redraws we wanted to do, and then also slightly embarrassingly, there was a bit of a mess up on. Kind of misunderstanding between us on a pretty good reason why we should talk on the phone rather than do it on email. But there's a misunderstanding over page sizing and stuff like that. So we had to redo a whole bunch of stuff before we could actually get it into a print ready condition. So, yeah.
Okay. Oh, you hear that's quite common. I know Chris Wildgoose talked a bit about that, about resizing stuff. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, you said it took a while, but it isn't a short book. It's like 170 plus pages.
Yeah. So, yeah,
I can see why it took a while.
Completely. And also, it's funny because we said on the Kickstarter campaign, it's 100 and whatever, 72 pages. But loads of people have been writing back to me when they get it. They're kind of saying, you know, bloody hell, it's really chunky. We didn't realise it's going to be that big. And I thought, to be fair, I wasn't going to charge you £20 on Kickstarter for like a 10-page comic.
Yeah, some people might.
Yeah, I said, right, yeah.
The printing quality generally, like the paper quality, is kind of, it's a really good stock. The whole product is kind of, I think I'm the only one that's got a physical copy, but it's really, really a quality product. I mean, so I think whoever kind of backed this on Kickstarter got an absolute bargain.
Yeah,
I'd say, and I figured as well, you know, if it ends up being the only time I do something like that, then I'd want it to look good, and you know, and also you feel a debt of responsibility to the people that have backed you on Kickstarter. So I wanted to make sure it was nice.
That's something you said on your Kickstarter campaign page was it's finished. You know, you're not going to wait for a book that isn't finished as well. Was that something you were intent on doing straight away, or?
Yeah, I wanted to do it all as, you know. One thing that we got out all as a finished product. The only thing we had to do at the tail end of the campaign was obviously there were some drawn in characters that are people that had paid for it to appear in person in the comic, and also courtesy of Mr. Butcher, the fantastic avatars that appear at the back of the book, which have got a really great reaction. And you know, that was so. They were the only things that we had to do at the tail end of it. But one thing I would say actually for anybody who's listening to this and who's thinking of doing a Kickstarter, think twice about doing one in the run-up to Christmas. for obvious reasons. It's a good thing that you can say, when you're doing the Kickstarter, you can say, you know, get this as a Christmas present. That's great. But everything obviously takes twice as long. And also, you know, so many things shut down and queues are much bigger. And it just generally, it was quite, it was a pretty hectic December. So,
I bet it was, yeah. Bloody hell, at the post office.
You had to take all these packages down to the post office to kind of get them sent off. And
there was a beautiful moment. There's an absolutely beautiful moment where we went into my local post office. My mum was amazing. She helped me get all the stuff together. And, you know, we took down like sacks full of whatever, 200 odd comics. And there was a great moment where we kind of brought them up to the counter about 4 o'clock on the Monday, just before Christmas. And I just turned around and looked at the queue of 30 people behind me. And they all looked at me with utter despair when they realised that they weren't going to get stabbed the rest of that day.
Nice.
That's a nice moment.
Yeah.
I just thought, actually, that makes me sound
like... Well, it's a nice, horrible moment,
yeah. Yeah. You should have seen the look on the guy who was serving us, his face, when he realised he had to do, you know, stamps or whatever, or, you know, those stickers for like 180 comics. Yeah.
What had you done before, Lex? I'm not aware of your books before this. What sort of stuff have you done then?
Oh, this is the first thing.
Right, okay.
So I've always, you know, been really into movies and comic books and all sorts of stuff. And then I worked in TV and film for a little bit, doing some really awful stuff, kind of working on horrible reality show formats. Geordie Shore would be
He's looking for a head.
That'd be pretty high.
We're trying to get Holly on the show. She's blanked me.
What's this we?
Okay.
So I worked in TV and film a bit, and I was a script reader for film companies. Always wanted to write my own stuff, but never got around to it. Then started doing kind of a normal career, and then just decided in 2011 that I really wanted to get something out, and, you know, I enjoy comics, and just thought this would be the best way to do that. So yeah.
Oh, cool.
So reading film scripts, did that colour the way you actually wrote your script yourself? Or
a little bit, but actually really quickly, really quickly, because you're doing the whole, you know, you're thinking about how the panels are going to go down and how you want to end every page, all that stuff. It is obviously slightly different, and obviously there's a massive difference in pacing, you know, I think, between the two things. So although, you know, essentially I think, you know, what you're looking to do is hit all sorts of different beats and hit a dramatic beat and reveal information about this and that from this page on this page or that, in a comic book, you know, you're thinking much more about how to compress that and how to pace it properly. So I actually found it quite different, to be honest, in the end. And I think we both me and Ed learned quite a lot on it. You know, I mean, one of the things that was really tricky was just, you know, essentially it's an action comic. There are lots of action sequences, and if we'd have done splash pages and dropped the panel count across the entire thing, we'd have ended up with a 300 page thing set on one night. And I don't think that would have worked the same. So,
Okay. Were you tempted to put it out as a series as opposed to a one shot, or?
No, just because the only reason I would have wanted to do that is just to get that nice thing of getting it out and starting to get feedback and whatever. But to my mind, from the very beginning, all I wanted to do is give people something, you know, a really good adventure that you might read in one or two sittings. You didn't want to put down. I just figured, even just putting the breaks in, say I was going to put a break after the first 25 pages, I just couldn't really figure where to put that would, I don't know, I just didn't want to split the story up, basically. Whereas I think, you know, there are lots of serials that, where obviously it makes more sense because they're potentially going to go on over, you know, months and months and months and months, and you're going to have all sorts of things. Whereas I always had a very strong idea of, this is the beginning of a story and I know where it ends. And so, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, cool. Essentially, you'd funded Ed's art over years to get to the point where it's kind of finished a book, and then the Kickstarter paid for the print run.
Correct?
Wow.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. So it was I've got to pay thanks to my wife who part up with me funding a comic book while trying to be an adult human being as well. But I think all of us are in that boat to some degree.
Yeah, I've never been described as an adult, fortunately.
So. Yeah, I was walking down the streets, actually, my wife, we were in town, and I was thinking to myself, I'm 39, and I was trying to get her to look at a YouTube video of the intro to Battle of the Planets. Do you remember anyone?
Oh,
Battle
of the Planets. Oh,
yeah.
And I was looking at her and thinking to her, a little part of me was thinking, yeah, I'm not, I really haven't grown up yet. What am I doing?
Yeah.
I always thought the purple one, what was his name? Was it Jason? I can't remember now. Who was the purple one? He was cool, wasn't he?
The little one. Is it just me and Tony who have seen this, or did anyone else see this?
I remember it. Science Ninja Team Gatchaman, if you want to
Yeah.
That's Mark. Who is Mark, Jason? Mark,
Jason, Tiny, Kiop, and Princess. Yeah, I'm a big fan of that.
That's it, yeah. Yeah, I might have had an ex-girlfriend I got to wear a princess t-shirt in a sexy circumstance.
Nothing with that.
Oh, my word. So now that you've got like Assault on Fortress Doom, it's been sent out to the lovely people who backed on Kickstarter. I'm guessing you've got a few boxes sat around in your spare room.
Yeah, right next to me right now. I'm kind of walled in by boxes.
There's lots of creators out there who know exactly what you're talking about. Now, what are you going to do with it? Are you going to take this on the road for this year? Are you going to go to conventions? What's your plans for the year for Assault on Fortress Doom?
So I think we'll probably go to a couple of London-based shows in the first 6 months of the year or something locally and just try and get it out like that. I think we're going to put the digital version on Comixology. Do you know what? It's a bit embarrassing to actually admit this. I was so out with getting the Kickstarter done, all that stuff. And even though this whole thing's taken ages, I hadn't really put loads of thought into what to do afterwards. So my wife was just reminding me that we still have plenty of copies that I could sell to people. But I think she's thinking more about getting the spare room back again. So yeah, I mean, the main thing is just, I suppose, you know, my main thought in doing all of it was, I just, you know, like the main reason why we're all in comics, so I just wanted to tell a story and have the fun of doing that and see getting people's responses and whatever.
Yeah.
That was the main thing. And then, you know, if any other people enjoy it and interest in the more people, then that would be great. So I think I'll just try and keep pushing it out and, seeing what may come of it, whether or not it interests anyone, see if anyone else wants to work with me.
I mean, as soon as you start going to conventions as well, you know, you get bitten by that bug. And
this will be a big seller at conventions. I can see this going down well, dude. Yeah.
That'd be great. I mean, it's I went to a few. I suppose I've been going to conventions for the last three or four years, really. But last year was the first time. Obviously, I was thinking, you know what, this is coming up. I'll be able to go to conventions and do my own thing soon. And I really enjoyed Thought Bubble. That was brilliant. There's just so many people out there doing it. I think I'm going through that. That thing, I don't know if anyone else has talked about this on podcasts or you guys have experienced this, but I'm going through that thing right now where I'm very, very pleased with it and I'm proud of it, but I'm also, you know, you when you finish something quite big like that, you're a little bit drained and I'm just kind of thinking, I've just got to get my energy back to go back on the road.
Yeah. You've got to stand up behind that table and start selling it again, haven't you, I suppose, yeah.
Exactly, and you know, the other thing, of course, is when you know a story inside out, you've got to try and keep it fresh in your mind because things that may be quite funny or interesting the first time around, when you've talked about them with the artist and you've been working on that for years, it just doesn't mean anything to you anymore.
Yeah.
It loses, you know, you can't see the wood for the trees.
Yeah, definitely.
I get ideas coming up in the comic that I've been planning for years and working on. So when they kind of arrived, it's kind of like, well, I've known this is coming for years.
Yeah.
But then obviously to the reader, this is the first time that they're hitting him.
You have to mentally sort of step back from it, don't you? And then know that the reader has never experienced it before, so you have to keep that enthusiasm up, which is tiring, but
but you know it's part of the whole, and it's I'm hoping to go to a couple of shows and just you know push it forwards a bit more, and the other thing I was kind of hoping is just it would be a kind of calling card to anyone else who wanted to do anything. And you know, I'm a writer, but I wish I could draw, but I'm absolutely I've got no qualms to say I'm probably the worst drawer or artist in the world. I can't even do a stick man. I do the least convincing stick man in the world. So, you know, so I'm in that position that a lot of people are in where I love comics, love doing them, but I need to partner up with people to get
But I'll say this for you. You've got about 180 page graphic novel done, dusted, printed up. It's a whole story. It's done. You know, it's got a beginning.
And people have got it in their hands as well, which is the best part of this. You know,
and that says a lot. That says an awful lot.
Oh, awesome, awesome. That's very funny to say.
At the moment, where can people get a copy of Assault on Fortress Doom?
So at the moment, basically, if people just get in contact with me on Twitter or through the website, I still got physical copies, which I'm mailing out to people. So I've got to tell you a really funny thing. So, I think you guys all knew, when the Kickstarter was running, because you were very kind and you featured me on the podcast and mentioned it before. Mm. So I thought the Kickstarter page was reasonably clear about, how you get hold of it. It's, Kickstarter's like a pre-order system. Mm. But I've had some amazing things recently where people, even friends, even reasonably close friends, have come up to me just after the Kickstarter ended and said, congratulations, that looks great. How do I get hold of the comic?
So
there's a whole wave of people who are coming up to me who evidently didn't get that the Kickstarter was a way to get your hands on the comic. So I'm sending copies physically still like that. And like I said, we're going to try and get it on Comixology fairly soon, and that will be another way to get hold of it.
Cool. I think the only trouble we might have with Comixology is you can't do spreads on Comixology.
Yeah.
So you'd work that out.
Yeah, that's. I guess what we'd have to do is, so you have to drop those down back into single pages, don't you?
Mm, that's a shame, because like some of those pages are cracking.
Yeah, there's two or three double splash pages, aren't there? It's tricky. So it may just have to be one of those things if we do that. So
they just have to turn the tablet on its side, won't they? Whoever's reading it, I think sometimes, although you lose a bit of detail, you can close in and close out, can't you?
Yeah. Did any of you guys said, Dan, you have a physical copy, but for the other guys, did you look at it on a tablet or did you read it as a PDF?
No, I used it. It was because it was such a big file, because it's such a big comic, I had to download mine onto my PC, but I haven't looked at it on the tablet yet.
I've used it on my laptop, so.
That's another thing that I think I learned a massive amount doing it. Another thing that's a really big thing, it sounds obvious, but when you spend absolutely ages doing a comic and you're so used to seeing it on a computer screen, and you always forget that the image that you're looking at is having light blasted through it, and so when you print it, it's a lot darker. I think that's a real thing as well. It's just for people to keep an eye on that, because I really like the printed version. The A4 book version is great. I'm really proud of it. But my favourite format for reading is I really like the iPad. I like it on a tablet. Okay. It looks even more colourful on that. So
yeah, oh brilliant. What shows are you thinking of doing, Lex? You got any plans for what you're going to be doing?
Yeah, there's a maybe there's a Super Comic Con, isn't there, coming up in London?
Have you heard of that?
Beyond that, I haven't actually looked at. There's a Twitter. There's someone I follow on Twitter who lists out all of the shows, so I've got to have a proper look and work out where we're going to go to. Yeah. And something like that. And if it builds momentum, I'm able to do another print run of it or something like that, then maybe I'll even pop up at Thought Bubble or something later in the year with it.
So have you got a table at London? I didn't see you on the site. So you got a table there, have you? Or?
Oh, sorry. No, I haven't. Do you know what? I haven't actually. I'm guessing, are they booked out already?
What, probably London Super Comic Con?
Oh, well, I guess it will be London Super Comic Con 2017 that I'll see you at.
there's an MCM in May. I don't know if that's booked out, but I know that's quite difficult, but...
That hasn't been released yet, but I would get on the mailing list Comics Village on MCM, because you do really well there, I think.
You would do, mate. I think that's right up your street. Yeah.
There's a. I think I went to that one last year, but there are two different kinds, aren't there, in London? Because there's one that's a bit more comic-y, and there's another one where the comics are kind of all shunted down one end, and it's basically like.
There's the London Film and Comic Con, isn't there? Which is, I think that's the one at Olympia. And then there's MCM as well. MCM's a little bit Comic Village at one end, but that Comic Village is quite substantial now.
Yeah,
that's at XL, isn't it?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Well, so much information there.
Yeah.
And all these talk of events, which I think would segue quite nicely to the events, don't you think?
Okay, we've got an events section.
Hey.
Okay.
Just go.
Okay, events. There's quite a few coming up. We've got a couple of new ones, a couple of old ones that we've talked about before. First one, 24th of this month, is the next Comic Mart at the Royal National Hotel, Bedford Way, WC1HOD0DG. And that's 11 to 12. If you want to get in at 11, you've got to pay a fiver. You get in after 12 for free. A lot of very cheap back issues and that sort of thing. Well, I'll go there. It's a laugh. It's worth a look. Then on the 5th of February this month, something me and Dan are going to is the Singing Dragon launch party at Gosh Comics, 1 Berwick Street, Soho. At it will be people who've had books recently published through this new imprint at Singing Dragon. There's Maria Stowen, who did take it as a compliment, which I personally loved. Thought it was an amazing book. Steve Haynes and Sophie Standing, who've done some really great work in Pain is Strange and Trauma is Strange. And it's being run by a friend of the show and previous roving interview guest, Mike Medaglia, who did 1 Year Wiser to much great acclaim, rightly so. He'll be hosting it. And it's going to be a little party, 7 p.m. onwards at Gosh Pop Along. That's good. And we might even, we've asked permission, so we might be doing a little bit of recording there. We've asked it from the Singing Dragon people. So,
oh, lovely.
Yeah, taking someone for a coffee and doing a little interview with Maria. I think Maria Stone's going to do an interview with us, which will be great. And then the following day, something I'm going to try and get to, and a lot of, we've had a lot of people message us and say they're going to this, and I think Vince is at it, is True Believers.
True Believers
Comic Festival at Cheltenham Racecourse. Rachel Smith is there. Rob Williams, Andy Diggle's now not going. I think he's cancelled. I think you're fine. So if you go in there, see Andy Diggle, he's not appearing now. Mike Collins and a Lonely Vincent's going to be at that.
Yeah, it's going to be a great event. It was the first one was really good last year, so looking forward to this year's.
Yeah, it should be good. Yeah, yeah. I'm going to try and make that as well. So that's the Saturday, isn't it? Is it a single day? Is it, Vincent?
It's a single day. Yeah.
Right. Okay. And then the big one for us is London Super Comic Con, which is 20th and 21st of February, 9:30 a.m. at XL Centre, which is London's Docklands, E16-1XL. So they announced guests in waves. So there's some of the newer guests they've announced are Mahmoud Asrar, who's great X-Men artist, Steve Dillon, which I wrote you guys an excited message this week. He's going to be great. Sean Phillips, Brian Bolland, Matteo Scalera, who will no doubt be a long queue for his work, as well as some guests they've announced previously. C.B. Sabowski, who I think it was announced this week, is moving to, is it Marvel Animation, I think? He's moving out of Marvel Comics, which is a shame.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Frank Cho, we're a big fan of. Marv Wolfman, I can't wait to meet him. The brilliant Duncan Fagredo, who's a pal of ours. Yep. Mike Zeck, Mr. Lamming, Mr. Beatty, and Mr. Stokes, always, I like to call them the Axis of Evil. They'll be there to bully me, undoubtedly. Avatar Comics are there. I think they always have a stand there. It should be quite good. 2000 AD and Titan have also got a stand. Small Press includes Marcosia, Aces Weekly, Hellbound Media, Orangutan Comics, Apes and Cakes. Capes, sorry, not Cakes.
Apes and Cakes.
Apes,
ooh,
and Cakes,
lovely.
Have been print by me, yeah. Big Punch Studios, Fly Comics, Loose Scannon. Gavin Mitchell's going to be there, along with, it's hot off the press, announced today, our fourth member, Emily Owens, going to be popping along, so that should be a laugh. Yes. Good to see you. Ray Smith, Adam Cadwell, and many, many more. And we've got a table. So come along. We'll have a microphone. Come along and do a sexy interview with us.
We'll have a microphone. We'll have some books. We'll have a party. That's what it'll
yeah,
be.
Yeah, some great
quick drugs. Shout out for
drugs. Sorry.
I follow that with Emily Owen. She's collecting artwork again for another Syrian refugee thing. So if you're a comic book artist and you're going to be at London Super Comic Con, maybe with a table, get in touch with her via Twitter, and it'd be great if you could submit a piece to that, and we can auction it, and then give the money to people who really need it.
Very good.
Yeah,
cause.
Definitely.
Very good.
And I've got—I heard a little whisper on Twitter today that there might be some Mark Lamming Planet of the Apes pages going up.
Sweet.
I'm an owner of one of them, and they are beautiful pages, amazing pages. Yeah. So if you can't find her at the convention, come and see us, because she would no doubt be hanging about with us, and you can leave stuff with us there. Following that is the 27th to the 28th of February is the London Film and Comic Con at Olympia, which we talked about a minute ago. That's in West London, Hammersmith Road, W14 8UX, amongst a load of fucking shitty TV and movies, Ed-listers, is Timothy, middle name fucking, last name Truman, who did Star Slayer, Grimjack, Scouts, Hawkworld, I...
he's got the same middle name as me.
Yes, yeah. It's I've never met this geezer, and I'm a huge fan of his stuff. Hawken, which is a Western comic he had out a couple of years ago, was fucking ace. So get along and see him. Also, comic-wise, that is Kenneth Rocafort, who's just finished the Ultimates. Vanessa Del Rey, I think he's doing the Scarlet Witch mini, but did a series called The Hit, which is very good. And good old Lou Stringer, the Beano artist, who writes a great blog on British comics, if you ever get a chance to see it. Very, very good. So, look, if you can find amongst fucking people who are Wookiees or E.T.'s finger or something like that.
they're not the same person.
No one's dressed up as E.T.'s finger at a Comic Con since 1983 or two, have they?
Well, I went there 4 or 5 years ago, and I think it was a lady who was E.T.'s finger was there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did she have a table where she's just walking around just prodding her finger in?
No, she was unaware of my copyrighted tour that I do around London. And I'm not repeating that for you guys know what I'm talking about. But yeah, so, I mean, there's not that much comics there, but there's some good comic guests. And if you don't have to queue up, go late, get in the door and don't queue up with annoying people dressed as fucking women with dragons in Game of Thrones. Then pop-
and that's just Tony.
Yep, that's just me.
Right, so lots of events coming up. The year's starting with a bang. Let's move to the shout-outs, including a very special one to start us off.
Yeah, do you want to do Dan? Oh, should I do my first one? Yeah, am I doing that one? Yeah.
Yeah, you do that.
A shout-out to Chris Imber, big friend of the show, previous guest, lovely, lovely fucking bloke, is Mrs. Michelle Imber. Get well soon. She's in hospital at the moment, so just send your best wishes out to her.
Yeah, so from all of us, get well. Definitely.
Shout-out-wise, I got to see Slain, Volume 2, The Britannia Chronicles Primordial today by Pat Mills and Simon Davis. Yes, that's the book that I've got a page from, which I keep racking on about. That's come out, so buy that. It's beautiful, incredible. I showed you boys some of the pages today, didn't I? Incredible stuff. Shout-out to my son, who's just messaged me to tell me to behave on the podcast on Skype.
He's your son, and he just doesn't know you.
I think he knows me, unfortunately, too well. So I don't be playing this with his friends at university. But yeah, so hi to Ross. So I'd say hello.
Hi, Ross.
Four words that got me very excited this weekend.
Hang on, let me guess.
You ready? Go on, have a guess.
I have new shoes.
No. You ready?
This isn't my
penis. Punisher the TV series.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
How good is that going to be?
Is that definitely going to happen?
Well, I don't know. I saw it on the internet, so that means it must be happening.
I think it will happen because Daredevil's done really well. Jessica Jones has done really well. I think it will happen.
I think
what I've written is that he's done so well on set that they can consider that it's got enough. It's got legs to run a whole series.
I saw a picture recently of him like with a skull t-shirt, but the skull t-shirt looked a little bit photoshopped. Have you seen have you seen the picture?
I tweeted one today. It looked like kind of like the it's got a skull t-shirt that got wet and it all kind of,
it was like paint, isn't it, that sort of run.
And
I always feel like skull t-shirt, you should just go for the skull t-shirt, and it's like you're totally unapologetic about it. This is what it is. You don't make reference to it. It's just that's what he does, and that's what he's got on his t-shirt, and you get on with it. That Dolph Lundgren film would have been so much better if they just had the skull on his chest for the whole film.
Hang on. Right. Don't run before we can walk, son.
Right. I've got that in front of me. I quite like that film.
Yeah, I like that film.
Put the Travolta movie as the third best at the moment, because in that, people have to shoot at him before he shoots them.
I know, it's totally.
That's the fucking opposite of the idea, isn't it?
Yeah. Anyway.
Is it right? Did I see? Is it right? It's going to be the guy from The Walking Dead.
That's him, I think he's a good choice, actually.
Have you not seen any pictures of it?
I haven't seen any pictures. No.
Don't be so accusing. He's our guest.
He's kind of got that.
I can do what I want. He's here now.
you made me feel like a real idiot there. Sorry.
He's done every week to me.
Sorry, I haven't seen any pictures of him, sir.
That's quite all right, Lex. I'll let you off.
It's good because the Daredevil Punisher thing, where Daredevil was very much anti taking life, but he will beat the fuck out of people till they can have to drink all their food through straws. He's quite happily to kill.
Yeah, so, I hope he's not the main protagonist. I hope he's like, you know, he's
a one off or something. Yeah.
Yeah. And the other thing, talking about television, I know that the new season of Doctor Who's ended. But if you're missing a bit of Doctor Who in your life, then go to go and buy Doctor Screw in the TARDIS, which I watched this week. Quite good.
You watched that one? Okay.
I've got a copy of it. Yeah, I bought it as a joke a couple of years ago. Doctor Screw in the TARDIS. I don't know about the copyright on it, but it's quite interesting.
It's a parody.
Yeah.
You can get
it. Looks like you, actually. Emily Owen messaged me to say that it looked like you.
Look like who? Who are you talking about?
Vince.
I can neither confirm nor deny.
the Daleks say exterminate or something.
Yeah, it'd be like that. It'd be fine, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Okay. That's my shout out.
Love that comment. Lovely.
Oh, dear.
Anyone else got shout-outs?
Yeah, I just want to give a shout-out to Kev Brett. He of,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, Nottingham Comic Con, amongst other things. Brilliant artist by himself. And he did a picture of the Red Mass from Mars being chased by one of the aliens from Mars Attacks.
Oh,
nice.
Yeah, and he sent me the original.
That's nice of him.
Yeah, out of the kindness of his heart. So that's going to go up on my wall. So thank you very much, Kev. You're a legend.
I'm going to be a total shill and say that I'm...
Oh, good. Again. So, here we go.
Down at vanguardcomic.com. I'm doing taking commission requests for London Super Comic Con, so I've printed up price lists and whatever on my Twitter feed. If you're interested, give us a shout. Okay. I'm sure many other.
I mean, I'd like just that page of you giving them the options of what kind of Moon Knight layout you'd like.
Yeah, well, kind of. If someone says you want, I want a picture, so you give them a good kind of. I always do like 8 or 9 thumbnails of something. Do you know what I mean?
That looked great to me. Bloody hell! Cool.
If someone said to you, "I want to sleep with you for £1 million," would you do it?
Yeah, fuck yeah.
I'd
give it 8 or 9 options.
I'd go for the last one with the fist in the air. I don't know why.
Yeah. Oh dear.
Nice one.
Anyway.
What is a hyperlink, anyway? I don't know what it means.
We'll tell you off air.
Okay.
Right, do we have any... Is that it for the shout-outs?
I should say a couple, actually. I should say a big shout-out to Ed, you know, the artist on Fortress 2. He would have obviously, be seeing a lot. We would have seen a lot more of him involved with stuff in the promotion of the comic, but he is 4,000 miles away, so makes it a little tricky. he was brilliant, brilliant to work with, and I'm really looking forward to seeing the stuff he does next. And so big shout out to him, and people should check him out as well. Edgar Machiavello. He's got a very distinctive name, so it's quite easy to find his page on Facebook and DeviantArt. And also I have to give a shout out to my wife, who put up with me doing a comic for years and years, and also just because, like I said, our spare room is now looks like the Amazon warehouse. And little things like shout outs like this will appease her, for a few more weeks.
Yeah, so. Now you've ruined it.
Does that mean she's going to listen? Thinking of the figures, right?
I'm sure she will say, you're building the empire one person at a time.
Yeah.
Slowly cruising towards those double figures. But yeah, I'd say give it to Ed. He's done absolutely fantastic work on that book.
So it's a line. He was amazing. You know, he did absolutely so much on it, and he was obviously absolutely massive. It looks, I'd had an idea in my head for ages, and he drew exactly the thing that I've been dreaming of for ages, and it was brilliant. Can't say enough good stuff. So,
touche.
I'd like to give a little shout out to Jen yeah. Brown, who's her and I are cooking up a little secret project, and I saw some of it today, and it looks fucking astoundingly good. So just give her a little shout out.
Yay.
Shout out artists. Yeah, yeah. Very good. I showed you boys a little bit of it, didn't I? Yeah,
even though she won't talk to us, she won't give us an interview.
Who can blame her?
I can't blame her.
Yeah, very true, very true. Right, so shall we move on to the recommendations section of the show?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's just got sexier here. Tony?
Okay, I've got... mine's filled with a little regret.
As all sexy things normally are.
Yeah, afterwards, you know, you're sitting there on the couch on your own at midnight, you know, babe station's just finished.
Yeah. You're free 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I can't really continue after that now. That was the wrong intro. Anyway, my regret
comes
to the fact
that's the sort of thing you say as well, isn't it?
Yeah, always. Yeah. We'll call a cab. Anyway, so I got an email from NoBrow this week to say they had a new book out. In fact, it was Emma at NoBrow emailed me to say, I've got a new book out. Here's a little bit of a publicity. They send out a publicity sheet for it. Did you want us to send it to you so you can, you know, review it for, you know, down the tubes or for the podcast and that sort of thing? And being the nice yet quite stupid person that I am, I said, oh, you know, I know it's expensive to mail books out. Why don't you just send me the digital copy if that makes it easier? You know, thinking they'll go, oh, no, we'll send you the real book, you know. No, they sent me the digital copy. So as much as I loved it. Yeah, I know.
2-1 for the team there. You
know? Yeah, I did. Yeah, yeah. But I do like their book so much, so it's fine. You know what I mean? But so they sent me, it's the third book in a series of educational books they're doing. The first one was on Karl Marx, and the second one was on Sigmund Freud. And this is the third one, which is on Einstein, which comes out in March this year. It's written by Corinne Mayer, who is, I think, Swiss. Yeah, she's born in Geneva. She's a historian and a psychoanalyst, believe it or not. And the second, and it's illustrated by Anne Simon, who is from France. And she's appeared at Angoulême and this sort of thing. And it's basically this sort of quirky... I don't know if you know this, but it'll be 100 years in March since he published his General Theory of Relativity. So it's so the annals in the Annals of Physics, which is a German publication. So this sort of commemorates that. But, and it's also a great little time to do an educational book on him. And it's a funny, quirky little... I hate to call things very European, but it's got that sort of sensibility, you know, sort of art, you know, everyone's smoking and, you know, all this sort of thing in it again. But it's it allows Einstein to tell his own story. So just an example of that is, for example, he's saying, oh, they took my brain out and they examined it after I died. And there's a picture of him opening his own head up and taking his brain and showing it to the reader, you know. So he sort of falls and scrabbles about through his own story, and it takes him back to his childhood and when he was a kid and how he saw things as shapes. And yet he was a bit of an outsider at school, and the teachers didn't really understand him, but he's a very sort of clever guy, and it explains his history and what he did and how he became famous. And people pop up and ask questions about, you know, wasn't he more of a character than the scientist? And, oh, wasn't he friends with Marilyn Monroe, which unfortunately seems to be what he's famous for these days, and little sort of memes of him, you know, sticking his tongue out and stuff like that. And this sort of... It's an educational book that you could hand out to a class, but it's also a fun read for an adult, you know. And it sort of describes his history, and it's very nice. It's how many pages it is? It's 72 pages. It's a hardback. They bind it. They bind their books really nicely, and it's only $13.99. You can go to nobrow.net and find a copy of it. It comes out in March. Very worthwhile a look. That's my one.
Nice. What about you, Daniel?
I've been checking out an artist. I followed this guy for a little while now. I'm going to totally murder his surname. It's DC Stulpner. Hello.
I'm going to hazard a guess that you probably did fuck that up, but I don't know.
Yeah. It's Stelpner. And he's, he goes under the name of the Drawer of Drawings, and he's got a Tumblr account and a Deviant account, Art account, and it's just absolutely amazing, his stuff. It's really good. Kind of one drawing is not the same as the next. Like, if you kind of see my stuff, it's usually muscled, angry men, whereas his kind of one minute you got clock.
Oh, about your drawings.
So one minute you got Superman changing into Clark Kent and stuffing his cape into his trousers. And then the next minute, you got kind of like Hawkeye and Arrow through the head. He's just, it's great stuff. I'd really recommend checking him out. He's a really good artist. He did, I mentioned a comic a couple of months ago called, An I Word. It's a superhero webcomic. But he'd done the artwork on that by Mike Exner, the third, drew it. It's absolutely cracking. And he's one to watch. He's really good. So I don't think he's done any kind of like, work for the big guys yet, but I can certainly see that on the horizon if he hasn't done it already.
Yeah, oh, awesome. Okay.
We'll put his name up on the show notes then.
Lovely. Yeah, see if you can pronounce it better than I did, which is, yeah, very likely.
What would an awesome pod show be?
Yeah, without that was fucking something.
Without name murder. There you go. Yeah, what I'd like to recommend this week is actually a short. It's called 30 and a half minutes by a manga artist called Snippy MJ. Now, that's all I know about it, really. Now, bear with me, Tony. It seems to be the website that it seems to be on. It's almost like someone's submitted it to somewhere for like comic.manga/audition.com. And I just happened to find this just from a link on like Twitter, and it's a beautiful and moving sort of short story that you can find online for free. We'll put that, and I'll put the link on the show notes and on the Facebook and everything, because everyone needs to check this out. I think it's a manga tale and therefore reads like a manga, so it's from right to left. I don't read that much manga, so it took me a little in my brain.
Yeah, it takes me a while sometimes with manga. Yeah.
And that includes the panels as well. It's not just the pages, you know, you have to start at top right and then work your way across. Yes, 13 pages short, and it's a silent story about a random act of kindness from the Grim Reaper itself.
Okay.
Now, I'm not going to say any more than that, because I think it benefits from you knowing nothing about it and just following the action. It's very rare that I say, I'm going to recommend this and tell you nothing about it, but I just feel like people just need to see the story and make their own mind up about how it plays and stuff. I'll put the link up on the Awesome Comics page. I'll tweet it, and also on the Facebook. And I'd be really intrigued to see what people think about this. I mean, I'll admit it, I'm not one for manga. Like I said, I'm not one for mangas usually, and I discovered it just purely from a retweet. So went in completely blind to it. But it's early days, but it might be one of the most emotional, beautiful stories I'll read all year.
Wow,
that's quite a big thing to say. The creator I know nothing about, absolutely nothing, apart from this name, Snippy MJ. I don't know. I think they might be Vietnamese, but I can't be too sure about it. But the talent on show, from the artwork to the wonderful pace of storytelling and sort of the visualization of emotion, because it's quite an emotional story, are absolutely top notch. And the look of the Grim Reaper itself is phenomenal. Now, I did post something on Facebook earlier this week, just a little preview of what it's going to look like. I mean, it's just standard sort of grim, how you would imagine the Grim Reaper looking, but it's just so well rendered. Just beautiful line work. So I urge everyone to check this out. So check out our pages, check out the link, and see what you think of the story, because it actually kind of made me quite emotional at the end. It's got a nice 30 and a half minutes. So, and I'll just and it doesn't have, there's no dialogue. It's a silent story, so therefore, I think in some ways it almost translates better. You know, it's not like they've tried to translate it into English, and they've lost a little bit in the way. It's purely silent, so works brilliantly.
Cool.
So there you go. Who would have thought I've got emotion, eh?
Yeah.
Once again, it's the Beechams talking. anyway, Lex, what would you like to recommend to our listeners?
Actually, a film recommendation. Actually, just went along earlier today and saw a movie called Room, which has just come out, and it's, you know, it's Oscar season now, so there's all of the kind of big guns are coming out, and this is a movie I'd heard a little bit about, and it's basically it is, you know, that whole, the kind of horrible story from a few years ago about the chap in Austria who kept his daughter locked in a room downstairs for many years. Okay, yeah, so it's a story like that, basically. But what's surprising about it is it's not like a kind of movie of the week movie that plays up the horrors of that kind of stuff. It's actually it's all about the experience of the woman who's locked in this shed somewhere and her the child that she has by the person that took her. And it's just an absolutely remarkable film. I see a lot of stuff that I'm not so impressed by, or, you know, I thought that the reviews are kind of misleading, but this is really, really, really good. And the child's performance, I think when he filmed it, he was 8 years old. I mean, he's playing a 5 year old, but the kid's performance is absolutely out of this world. I think kids so often in movies are lousy and wooden. It's not their fault. It's just because, you know, why would you be a good actor when you're 7 or 8 years old? I think the Harry Potter movies, till they get to the very last one, some of the acting is awful.
The first, I can't watch the first Harry Potter now.
They're almost unwatchable, because it's really bad. I mean, you know, the kids were cast on how they look, not on their acting ability, and they get better as they go on. But this kid is absolutely incredible. I think it's the best performance I've seen by a child in a film, and it's a real tearjerker. And it's worth seeing. I think the main woman in it is called Brie Larson. And I think she's a shoo-in for Best Actress at the Oscars.
She's been nominated for an Oscar, yeah.
Yeah. So I'd recommend that. Go and see it. Don't take anyone on a date to see it. It's not a date film.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. it's quite bleak.
Right. Are there elements of hope in it?
There are, actually. To be honest, although it's kind of grim viewing at times, it is actually surprisingly uplifting. And their relationship is amazing. And it's life affirming by the end, but it's really well written. I think it's written by someone called Emma Donoghue, who actually wrote the book of this before all of those stories, all of these horror stories of people being kept in basements and whatever, was public knowledge. I think she wrote the book weirdly 5 or 6 years ago, and it's her screenplay. It's just a really good piece of writing. Yeah, it's really good. So I recommend it. Yeah. Have I broken the rules again by recommending a movie rather than a comic?
No, not at all.
No, people have recommended TV shows. They've recommended all kinds of things.
Yeah.
Well, we don't mind, do we? As long as people like have got something to recommend.
there's another really good film out at the moment. So a little film called Star Wars: The Force Awakens. I don't know if anyone's seen it.
I've never heard of it. Has anyone else heard of it?
Not what? Which film was it?
Never spoilers. Everyone's a ghost. Yeah, that is quite good. We had a little
that lady with the glasses definitely had sex with a Wookiee, didn't she? The other bit where she says I like the Wookiee and there's a little glint in her eye. She's blown the Wookiee, I bet you.
Did you find that arousing? Was that kind of
Yeah, I find everything arousing.
Who didn't? Yeah, who thank you. Lady Falkland's a bit low on fuel and Chewie has to put it on the hairy cart.
Not again, says Chewie. He makes that noise, bum sex noise.
That bum sex noise. Did he just...
You know what I'm like when we get towards the end of the show? I get a bit restless.
Yeah. Oh, God. I'm never going to look at Wookiees the same way again. Oh, dear. Well, there you go, folks. I think that's a fitting time to... lead us out. Wookie Nookie, lovely.
Oh, I like it. Yeah. Let's do it. Let's write a script.
Let's go. Right, let's not worry about the rest of the show. Let's just go off and write that.
Yeah, okay.
Be like the sequel to The Room. No, he won't be in it, Dan. Come on. No. Yes, thank you very much for being with us.
Yes, great, mate. Yeah, really good.
Cheers.
Thanks very much for having me. Yeah, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
That's all right. Now...
Yeah, that's right.
I'm being quite formal. What's all that about? In all seriousness, it's been great, and I think everyone should check out Assault on Fortress Doom.
Yeah, definitely go out and buy this because it's quality. It's a really good read.
Yeah.
That's all, guys.
Yeah, definitely, mate. Yeah.
Anytime, my friend. Anytime. We'll probably talk to Lex at a show somewhere. So this probably won't be the last you hear of him.
Yeah, definitely. We've sucked you in. You're part of the inner circle now, my friend. You'll never escape.
Yeah, exactly.
People that we bother daily now who've been on the show.
Yeah, we're collecting them all like sexy Pokemon.
Yeah, we are. Yeah.
Yeah, putting them all in a room downstairs at your house, Vince. Yeah? Is that right?
It's not a room. It's
Vince's house.
It's not a room.
The Wookiee Nookie room. Yeah.
I like to call it Wookiee Hole.
Hey! Very good. Very good.
Beautiful. Now, if you want to tell me how much you hate my jokes, folks, there's several different ways you can do it. You can email us, awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. If you've got any events or comics coming up you want to tell us about, tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @TheAwesomePod. We'll be putting up links and telling you about some upcoming guests. We've had some exciting news about some guests that we've got coming up.
Yeah, the last few hours we have, haven't we?
Yeah. We need to decide how to reveal this. Because normally we do it. Yes, we need to plan this.
I think we do.
Yeah.
Is it Stan Lee?
Very nearly.
It's just a bloke called Stan Lee.
I'm going to say it's, better than Stan Lee, and he's also a little bit similar to the English Stan Lee. That's what I'm going to say. Yeah.
It's amazing. It's like if I could pick a guest to come on this show.
All right, let's just leave it there. All right.
Alan Moore, is it?
No, it's Ainsley Harriet. All right.
I like Ainsley Harriet. I go Red Apple. What was it? I don't know.
You do what?
You had to vote on his show, didn't you?
Green pepper.
That's it.
What's the red one? Red Apple?
No, it's red pepper, green pepper. I can't believe we've divulged into Ready, Steady, Bloody Cook.
Listen, I wanted to talk about Loose Women last week and you told me off.
Yeah, but that wasn't the show, though, was it? Right, okay. And you can also check out us on Facebook, facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And thank you very much for listening to us, whether it was on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com, where there's lots of links for all of the books that we talk about here and the YouTube videos and everything. I suggest if you like the look of it, there's an easy way to do it. Just go onto the Awesome Comics page on Podbean. Just click on the link. I do spend time finding them.
So please, you do, yeah.
So please,
I always forget to send you them.
So please use them. They're there for a reason. And if you've listened to us on iTunes, thank you very much. It's awesome when we get iTunes listeners, and leave us a nice review if you feel that we deserve it.
No, we don't.
I think Lex deserves probably a bag of Smarties for putting up with us for the past 2 hours.
Not at all. It's great. I was actually, do you know what? I feel really bad. It's the very end of the podcast, but I just want to say as well, another big thanks as well to Dan, who was amazing. Last December, I was running out of time and we really needed to get the avatars done on the comic. So I've got to say a big thanks to you, Dan, for coming in and helping me out. That they look fantastic.
Cheers. It's an absolute pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Oh, can you feel the love tonight?
No one thanks me. We don't get thanks.
No, we don't. Thanks, Tony. Thank you. Vince. Yeah, thank you for being there.
Thank you, mate.
Yeah, all right. And thank you, lovely people out there, for listening to us again. We've got some more great stuff coming up next week. Stay tuned.
We've got a brilliant guest next week. Yeah. Not that this week. Fuck
you, Edmund. That's it. That's my last words. Fuck you.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah, so stay tuned, folks. Thanks for listening. And from Dan, Tony, Lex and myself, have a brilliant week and stay awesome. See ya.
See ya.
Hi, and welcome to episode 29 of the Awesome Comics Podcast. The place... Shut up, Tony.
This is the most enthusiastic hi you've ever done.
I know, because... right, we've got to start this again.
No!
No, I'm not... No, you've already put me off, you bastard.
Right, okay,
I'm very professional, right.
I know you are. I'm right. Not.
I hate you.